Hi, everyone. Welcome to America Trends. Thank you for coming along with us for the hour. I'm Amy Fuller. Welcome to our U2 America TV network and to our audiences across the globe with Biz Talk Radio. Coming up, we have Dr. Bill Matulich to talk to us about motivational interviewing, and this has to do with healthcare practitioners. Listen to this. It's sort of an approach to help doctors and other professionals communicate better to their clients about behavioral change. So helps the patients, helps everyone communicate better, and don't we need that in the medical field? So Dr. Bill will be along. Also, Kristen Sunana Walker from the Mental Health News Radio Network, talking about Valentine's Day and some of the stresses and even depression that can go along with it. So managing expectations, things like that. And it's always great to talk to Kristen. And then, appropriate for Valentine's Week, we have Mr. Michael Hart of the Heart of America show. Going to talk about the political headlines of the day, and why not work in some trivia from his book, Unknown America, as it's Abraham Lincoln's 210th birthday. And that is trending. So, and here's what else is trending. President Trump says he is unhappy with the deal that Democrats have handed him, but he's happy where it's going, and that he doesn't want to shut down the government on Friday. Friday is the deadline for Congress to come up with a plan for a border wall, and there will have to be negotiations to make the deal more to his liking, he said. All this today from the White House. And last night, El Paso was in the spotlight in the debate over the wall. He had his big rally from there. And El Paso is a major smuggling route for Mexican drugs, illegal aliens, Islamic terrorists. And, you know, that's sort of close to where the next caravan ended up. But again, when it comes to the government shutdown, looks like negotiation is going on. Both sides seem to be coming to the table for now, as they say. And let's just listen to a few of President Trump's comments from today.
I don't think you're going to see a shutdown. I wouldn't want to go to it now. If you did have it, it's a Democrat's fault. And I accepted the first one, and I'm proud of what we've accomplished, because people learned during that shutdown all about the problems coming in from the southern border. I've always accepted it. But this one, I would never accept if it happens, but I don't think it's going to happen. But this would be totally other Democrats.
So again, President Trump trying to avoid a potential government shutdown this Friday. The world's largest drug lord, El Chapo, found guilty in court and sentenced to life in prison by a jury of course, 12 Americans. This is, the biggest drug lord in the world. He's got in trouble for being in charge of the biggest cartel for more than 25 years. And the trial had everything, murder conspiracy, and a diamond-encrusted pistol, 500,000 pounds in drugs, cocaine hidden in jalapeno cans, presidential bribes, all kinds of things, made for TV movies, guilty on all 10 counts. And El Chapo, you might remember, already escaped once from U.S. custody by tunneling out of prison. So you see here, when the Twitterverse chimed in after the sentencing this morning, good old Kenny wrote, if the dude escapes U.S. custody, I think we just accept his magic and let him go. But anyway, El Chapo, life in prison. And now let's listen to some of the big Trump rally from El Paso from Monday night. As we had to break, he had some of his greatest hits going, and he had a lot of fun. Listen.
Thank you very much, El Paso. Thank you very much. I am very, very thrilled to be here in the great state of Texas. Right on the banks of the legendary Rio Grande, where, by the way, I don't know, you heard, right? Today, we started a big, beautiful wall right on the Rio Grande. Right smack on the Rio Grande.
Give me your attention, baby. I gotta tell you a little.
everyone. Welcome back to America Trends. Glad you're with us for the hour. You know, we love to profile businesses large and small, and also people who are helping people, and especially when it comes to the medical field. We all have these issues with getting our doctors to understand what's wrong with us, and getting our and the doctors getting us to understand what we need to do. And I'm so pleased today to introduce you to Dr. Bill Matulich, who he helps facilitate all these things. And as you see here, motivational interview and motivationalinterviewingonline.com is the website you want to go to. This, he's a clinical psychologist. He helps with motivational interviewing, and he helps affect counseling so that healthcare professionals, doctors and all, can talk to patients and really get what's going on and learn how to communicate. So good to have you here. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate
sure, when,
it.
Yeah, when you go anywhere, when you go into... A civilian like me, I go into see a doctor, and they've got all these fancy terms that I don't quite understand.
Right.
And so that's even a start. But also trying to talk and say you need to do this without feeling like the person's assaulting them and things like that. I suppose that all goes into what you do.
Exactly. Yeah. One of the doctors don't have very much time, certainly, and most healthcare professionals have a very limited amount of time, and they have good ideas about what you should do to be healthier and what you can do to take care of yourself and so forth. And so the natural tendency for anybody in the helping profession is just tell you what to do.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the research shows that doesn't work very well.
Because people all have feelings and...
Yeah, people have their own ideas. And sometimes people are ambivalent about even something as simple as taking medication, for example.
Yeah, true.
World Health Organization says that about 50%, only about 50% of people who have life-threatening illnesses are adherent to their what the doctors tell them to do.
Hmm.
Life-threatening illnesses.
So why is that?
It's because they... there's a lot of different reasons, but I think the core issue is motivation. I don't think... well, we know that if the doctors and healthcare professionals, psychologists, anybody who's involved in helping people change their behavior, if they pay attention to motivation, that person's motivation, then they do better.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
So it's like New Year's resolutions.
Yeah.
You know, we're in the second year of February, second week of February right now, so 80% of our New Year's resolutions are gone.
Out the door.
Out the door, right? And it's because of motivation. It's motivation.
Difficult decisions later in life include... medical decisions, retirement, living alone. This is a big part of all aspects of life. And you know, it always surprises me when people say they're afraid to go to the doctor.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're afraid to open up and express this is really going on and making it real, or they're afraid of what the doctor will tell them. Can you clue me in?
A lot of different reasons, yeah. But those are definitely some of them. And one of the reasons is, you know, I don't want to tell my doctor that I didn't do what he told me to do last time I was here.
Oh, that's a... obviously.
That's a huge one, you know. It's embarrassing. And, you know, because the doctor is well-meaning.
And usually it's the first thing you do when you go there, you get weighed.
You get weighed,
and
right.
that can be a stressor right away. But that's a huge thing, because we all know you're going to live a better life the less weight you have, the less pressure there is on your structure, your system. And so that's a hard way to start it. So I guess from the very beginning, you know.
Yeah. Last time I was at the doctor, he said, do you exercise?
What
am I going to say, right? I don't exercise as much as I should. It's really, it's a little bit embarrassing. But I think one of the things that's important to realize is that there's a couple of different kinds of motivation. There's internal motivation and there's external motivation. So when the doctor tells you to do something, that's his idea about what should motivate you. You should take these pills because this is what's going to happen. That's his idea. But... it's more important to pay attention to what the patient's motivation is. Patient's idea may not coincide at all with what the doctor thinks you should be motivated to do. And so motivational interviewing taps into the patient's own internal motivation. Why do you want to make the change? What's in it for you? And we try to get into that intrinsic, what's called in psychology, intrinsic motivation rather than extrinsic motivation.
But that's a lot, too, for a doctor, because they want to just say, here's what you should do, you'll be better.
Right.
But they have their own language.
Right.
And so, and they don't have a lot, you know, healthcare today, they don't have a lot of time to spend with us and try to psychoanalyze us and why we do what we
don't.
So what you're doing is so...
7 to 11 minutes per patient.
So what you're doing is so profound. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah, it's and the thing that I like about it is that it's effective.
Yeah.
It's effective. It really
helps. Having some good results.
Absolutely. Like I mentioned, 50% with life-threatening illnesses, the adherence rates. It's less than that if it's not a life-threatening illness. You know?
So there's when the, go ahead. I was just going to say, when the doctors talk to you, you're probably able to give them some really quick, easy things to help them communicate. And they're probably surprised at how easy it can be to once they get your tips.
It is easy, And it's simple kinds of things. You probably know them because you're an interviewer. You're a good interviewer yourself.
Well, so you know, I'm certainly not a doctor. But
you know how to ask open-ended questions, right?
Thanks.
You know how to reflect what your guest has to say. And those are simple kinds of things.
But see, that's a lot of listening, and doctors don't really have time. They want you to listen to them. So it's probably a whole new muscle for them.
Right.
Yeah,
it is. And for all healthcare professionals, it is the same. Psychologists, same thing.
Sure.
Dental hygienists. When was the last time your dental hygienist listened to your reasons for flossing your teeth?
Well, my stepmom's a dental hygienist, and she's awesome, so I'm the bad person to ask. She's pretty special. I just love this whole thing. And people can get a hold of you. Contact you, and what will you do for them?
Well, I teach a lot of workshops, for one thing. I've got an ebook that I've written about motivational interviewing that you can download off of my webpage.
Oh, tell me that real quick so people can write
it down. Yeah, it's www.motivationalinterviewingonline.com.
Yeah, good. And
there's also an audible book.
Yeah.
I made an audiobook out of the ebook. Yeah. So that seems to be really popular for people. And all kinds of people are trying to learn this. On my webpage, or on the YouTube video, which you had up a little while ago, on the YouTube video, there's comments below. And people say, how can I learn motivational interviewing so I can talk to my family?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Doctors or just anybody?
Just anybody. So can you imagine, talking to a teenager? Rather than yelling at him and telling him what he should be doing, instead having a conversation.
Imagine.
And tapping into his own motivation for getting good grades, graduating from school.
Sure.
Whatever
it's
happens
really
to be.
Good for anyone. Good, profound.
Yeah.
So they can contact you and do that. And we got your website out there. But I just have to ask, I'm short on time, 30 seconds, but why did you get into this? I mean, obviously it's such an important topic, but what struck you?
I was in the same position that most healthcare providers are in. I was having a hard time getting my patients, my clients, to do what I thought they needed to do to be healthier. And I couldn't figure it out because I had great information and great resources and great ideas. But they were reluctant to take my advice.
I love that, because if there's a breakdown in communication, none of what you do matters.
Exactly.
So I advise people to go talk to Dr. Bill Matulich and go to the website. It is a big book on motivational interviewing training, and the website, motivationalinterviewingonline.com. Dr. Bill, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Keep us posted on all you're doing.
We spent the weekend getting even.
All the love songs this week, right? Valentine's Day week? Hey, glad to have you with America Trends. I'm your host, Amy Fuller. Our good friend of the show, Kristen Sonata Walker with the Mental Health News Radio Network, is going to join us right now to talk us through Valentine's Day and all the stuff that goes with it. Because, for a lot of holidays, associated things are stress. Depression. Christmas, you have all the stress of having the best parties, making sure everyone gets the gift they want, your expectations, and some of that carries through to Valentine's Day, plus the added bonus of whether you've got a sweetie or not. So, Kristen, hi, how are you?
Hello, I'm good.
Hey, right here. This is for you.
Oh, thank you.
This is from, a few years back, I used to have a Galentine's Day luncheon for my friends, and it was really fun, and you can sort of poo-poo and say, I'm not worried about Valentine's Day and I'm not going to worry. But then when the day comes, or you walk into the store and there's balloon, everything's commercialized because everyone wants to make a buck off it. So it's there, right?
Yep, it's definitely there. And people get a little sick of either feeling like they're without if they don't have a plus one, and then having that bombardment of candy, flowers, everything in front of them in every store they go to, or they feel like they're pretending to be okay about being alone when maybe they really are, but other people kind of don't believe them.
Mm-hmm. And then I heard about people who celebrate because they get to be alone. I heard that in the studio today, so there's that too. But we're handling some of the other things. There can be big discomfort. And as I've said before, I don't want to minimize singleness because it can be very painful. We can joke about being alone for Valentine's Day, but day in and day out, if you're someone who, sorry, but the Bible says God made us to be with somebody. And so for us to feel alone when we are alone, it's very natural. So we've got the discomfort of that. And then we've also got, people who are in a toxic relationship. And then softer issues like, will he get me what I want? Or will I do the right thing and make the best dinner? And things like that. So there's just a lot to go along with it. And once again, we've just got to sort of, I guess, give ourselves a break and not have the highest expectations for everything.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And, you know, there are some relationships that many of us, I'd say most people, are in and out of throughout the course of their lifetime, where that is supposed to be their sweetie. And they are the most alone they've ever felt in their life in that relationship. So there's a degree to this, too. I think it's really good to be able to enjoy it alone if you want to, while also having a ton of compassion for people who are really uncomfortable about the fact that they're alone on Valentine's Day.
Yeah. I know you've got this radio network and downloaded in over 170 countries with all your podcasters. What are some of the tips? Because you sort of curate all these psychologists, psychiatrists, and specialists. What do you tell people like that? Because sometimes that can be the loneliest thing, with you're with someone, but you're sort of alone. So how do you talk people down?
Yeah, I mean, for all of our great guests that come on and our podcasters too that talk about this, you know, they talk a lot about things we've talked about many times, but that ability to fill your own cup. And maybe sometimes these kinds of holidays, well, Valentine's Day isn't really a holiday, but these events that happen that are all about being a couple, in terms of, you know, sales and all, you know, what's out there that you see in stores and stuff. Those can be great times for you to reevaluate. Am I in something that feels really fulfilling? Why do I feel so alone? Is this something I need to work on? Or is this that I'm not really in a loving relationship? So even though it can feel awful, it can be really a great catalyst to making some really wonderful changes in your life.
Yeah. Very understandable. Then when it comes to, let's talk about trite things. Do you remember, I don't know if you remember being a teenager, but I do.
I do.
The flowers.
I didn't, but.
So if you didn't get the flowers, the chocolate, something's wrong. What? He doesn't love me? What's going on? He's not, you know, the kids say now, they call each other boo. He's my boo, she's my boo. I heard that from the millennials. Control room knows. But it's not just about, you know, Hallmark wants to make a buck, God bless them. Cadbury chocolate is one that started the Valentine's Day commercialism.
Right.
So there's all that to go with it. But, you know, it's really something, when you can do something, I guess, from the heart, when you make something lovely. Oh, look, someone arranged just a little, for our TV viewers, little heart mug with maybe your boo's favorite things in it. Just something from your heart can be meaningful for years to come, right?
And hey, your boo could be your horse or your dog or your friends.
Absolutely.
I mean, your boo could be you. And it can also be a neighbor down the street that you know is alone and they miss their spouse who maybe passed away years ago, and you go and do something really nice for them, or you do it as a couple if you're in a relationship with another person. I mean, there's so many ways to celebrate this day that doesn't have to be about you feeling bad about yourself. And, you know, when you're a teenager, I think my ex-husband is still a teenager, even though he's 65, because he calls me his boo.
And I know you still get along because you appear together, yes, on your podcast and you help people get through, you know, stuff you might be going through with your exes, and here you are.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking about this for this particular show. I was actually at a restaurant last year that I picked. I knew I was going to be alone, and because I was
traveling. No, because now you've got your horse.
This is true. I have my horse, but at that time I did not. I was out of state and I was doing a huge project, and I was by myself on Valentine's Day. So I picked the most expensive restaurant in this town, and I took myself to dinner. And the hostess, in front of everyone there, said, "Oh, you mean you're eating alone?"
No, she didn't. She did not say that.
Yes, she did. She was about 18, and I thought, "This is a great learning moment for me."
Kristen, did you kick her?
No, I thought. Believe me, for a second. Younger me would have been upset, but I thought, okay, how can I help this young woman embrace that she's going to be alone sometime? So I didn't want to shame her. I didn't want to shame her for what she said. So I waited and I thought about it through dinner. What can I say? How can I approach her? And then we had a really great conversation. And I said, go to the movies by yourself. even if you're in a relationship with someone, take yourself out to dinner. It's a wonderful thing to do for your self-esteem.
I love that you do. Oh, look at that. I love that you, for our radio viewers who can't, or listeners who can't see this, a little Valentine you make for yourself. To me, love me, you're the best. So Kristen, I love that you did that because that's so you to take something and try to help someone with it. So, you know, good conversation. I love it. And it's just, you're very good at helping people through things. Friday is Singles Awareness Day. So I don't know what we're supposed to do with that. It just drags it on sort of one more day, but...
Right. Who planned that to be after Valentine's Day? That's interesting.
How about give yourself?
Well, I hope it's an empowering thing. Singles Awareness Day. I hope it's an empowerment thing.
Do your self-care Thursday and Friday, and then you know what? Every day there beyond. Kristen, we're out of time, but happy Valentine's. Oh, one more minute. I'm sorry about that. Okay, so what I was going to ask you though. Sorry about the time mix up there. I was going to ask you. You worked. Another thing I love about you, you've given back so much. You worked at a suicide crisis hotline.
Yes.
And yes. Again, it's fun to make fun of, the commercialization of it. But it's just one more thing that can make someone say, boy, you know, my life's not what I want it to be. And I feel like it's never going to be there. And you've been someone who's taken your time. And I know it takes heart and a lot of soul to talk someone down when they call a suicide hotline. So,
yeah.
How do you do that?
You just have to dig deep for your own well of compassion, remove judgment. You know, it's not your business why they feel this way. It's your business to try to help them maybe see things from a different perspective. So that's how I handle it.
Kristen, you're the best. Happy Valentine's Day. Appreciate it. Not too long ago, I was dancing. It is America Trends. We have high hopes that you'll stay with us for the hour. Right now, we are bringing you Michael Hart of the Heart of America show. Michael, wanted to get you on Valentine's Day, but Valentine's Day week is good just enough. Michael, for years and years, deep in the South, Birmingham, has had this great radio show. Cranky, conservative, sometimes he throws things, and that's when we knew we wanted to have him on the show. So he comes on every week or two to talk about what's going on. He's the Michael Hart Show, michaelhartshow.com. And he's also got this great book, don't you, Michael, Unknown America, Myths and Little Known Oddities About the Greatest Nation on Earth. And everyone I've bought this book for, and Michael, I've spent a buck or two, loves this book, writes back, and they're waiting for the second edition. So how's that coming?
Well, Amy, it's coming along rather slowly just because I've had a lot of requests to do a children's version of the book. And as you're well aware, there are some entries into the original one that are a little on the adult theme side, not that they're risque, but just some of the language that I've had to clean up a little bit. There's a lot of quotes in there and a lot of things, as we've talked about, for example, James Buchanan and his personal picadillos that I had to omit from the children's version. So we're working on cleaning that up while we're simultaneously doing number two.
Amazing,
so to speak.
Amazing you're cleaning that when our schools are trying to, so to speak, when our schools are trying to teach our kids strange things younger and younger, which is a topic for another time, I guess. But I love that a children's book, because sometimes, I mean, I had some great history teachers coming up and they really bring you into the action. But if you don't, it can just seem sort of just so obtuse that you don't even get into it and have a good foundation of what's going on and what went on.
Well, you know, one of the things when I wrote the book that I had to be very careful about when I started doing the children's edition of it is I don't want to be that guy that outs Santa Claus. And there are a few things in the book that, you know, I did a speech yesterday for a Republican group in Alabama, and I was talking about Thanksgiving Day and how a lot of that was just contrived and revised and didn't happen the way it went down. And I saw these long faces and all the grandmas in the room that were concerned about the old Dixie plate that they had with the hand on it, with the turkey drawn on it. And I told them they didn't have to throw that away, but they had to be aware that, in fact, that was not as factual as history would portray. So I had to kind of temper just a little bit.
Well, it is funny, the things we learned in school that either we didn't learn or we learned completely wrong, which is probably even worse. So it's sort of cool to have you here today, too, because trending on Twitter all day, I kept seeing Abraham Lincoln's 210th birthday would have been. And
right.
So, of course, look at it. Look, he's celebrating. TV audience is seeing a picture of Abe with a birthday hat on. That's fun. Celebration here. So what... Talk to us a little bit about Abe. What don't we know that we should know, or what did we learn wrong?
Well, you know, he's a really fascinating character himself. And I'm actually doing this thing. I'm doing these little micro tweets about presidential peculiarities. A lot of people don't realize that Lincoln is in the Wrestling Hall of Fame, that he only lost one match out of about 300. He was a tough cookie. Yeah. He was also a bartender and owned a bar early in his career. And he actually is the only president with a patent.
He developed a patent. He had a bar. He might have been the president that had the original beer summit.
He may very well have been. He was, you know, but the funny thing about so many of our presidents is, particularly back in the colonial days, is we have this bad habit of canonizing them, or, you know, kind of bestowing sainthood upon them. And a lot of them, you know, Lincoln was very melancholy. He was very distant when it came to his wife. He was very distant when it came to his children. He loved them very much, but he didn't convey that very well. And so there are a lot of things from his past, but he was a partier. He was a drinker. He was a fighter. He was old Abe.
How about that? You know, it's funny because with him especially, but you have psychologists, and the more we know, the more we sort of know. And so sometimes they try to go back to historical figures like Abe and say, well, we seem to think that he certainly suffered from depression and things like that. From your studies, what do you think?
I think he did. You know, there's been a lot written about Abraham Lincoln's melancholy. But if you think about it for a moment, you know, he lost several sons. Only one of his sons survived to adulthood. One died. Willie died of what they called bilious fever, which was a disease that they gave to every single disease. They didn't know what it was. Robert is the only one that survived. You got to bear in mind, Lincoln has no descendants. And so, you know, he had a very harsh life, and he didn't get along very well with Mary Todd later in life. And she was a real... Yeah, she was very twisted in her mind, and was, you know, Robert even tried to have her institutionalized after Lincoln died. So he had a lot of things in his life that were very, very heavy on him. And frankly, he took the Civil War and the Emancipation Proclamation very personally.
Well, there's a whole thing there to go over, but that's for another segment. So good old Abe, 210 years old. And thank you for sharing a little bit about your book from Unknown America. So from then to now, boy, you just sort of wonder what our founding fathers and people like Abe would say about politics today. And, you know, when we start talking about government waste and the strange things we do, I can't help but think of those very expensive toilet seats that someone busted down about 20 years ago and said, why are we spending this? And then you hear about Nancy Pelosi and the money she spends just on one trip to somewhere. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, and it blows your mind. So here we are today, and we might have a government shutdown Friday, maybe not. What are you guys talking about on your show? What are your callers interested in? Are they paying attention to everything, or are they just sort of like, you know, build the wall and keep us safe? Are they paying attention to the Mueller and to the Ocasio-Cortez and the Green Deal? And of course, we'll talk about the blackface in Virginia here in a moment.
Well, you know, talk radio listeners are very similar from market to market and community to community. Obviously, the Mueller investigation is high on the list. But in the last few weeks, you know, when I speak very frequently about the role of the media as it relates to politics. And so a lot of the conversation is about people like Alexandria Cortez, but then again, also this, Tlaib woman, as well as Omar, and the very anti-Semitic remarks and tweets in the last few days.
Yeah, and Michael, we're going to have a little bit of a soundbite on President Trump's response to her. He thinks he wishes she would resign from Congress, but certainly some of her subcommittees. But we are going to talk about that. And I know you've been paying attention. I want to ask you, because I'm not so up to date on everything she's done, the new congresswoman from Minnesota. So, but I think that does get people's attention.
Absolutely. Well, again, you know, we've been talking a lot about the socialism, and you brought up the toilet seats. And isn't it interesting that you have all these people that are talking about government spending on health care, immigration policy, so many other things, you know, transgender, you know, transformations being paid by the government. But yet we're spending $2,000 on a toilet seat. And then, as I learned, right there in California, where I believe you're broadcasting from, Gavin Newsom decides to pull the plug on the high-speed rail, which is what Cortez wants to replace air travel with. So it's like every single day, no matter what they do, I'm starting to feel sorry for them, Amy. They can't catch a break because they come out with these outlandish ideas that get shot down by their own party.
I do, too. If they're not hoodwinking their constituency, I worry that people aren't seeing through it. But Ocasio-Cortez, our lovely young new congresswoman from New York, who, by the way, some people are saying, change the Constitution so she can run for president in 2020. Mm-hmm. What? But she said the world's going to end in 12 years, I think, because of all the bad stuff. And then, but in 10 years, she wants to have us done with fossil fuels, and we're driving in yabba-dabba-doo cars instead of planes, trains, and automobiles. So I don't know what she's so worried about if we only got 12 more years left. What say you?
Well, I'm not very quick to point to people's mental capacity, but this woman is completely divorced from reality, and she's been such a richness of memes and captions and headlines. But at the end of the day, she doesn't know what she's talking about. She needs to go back to bartending. I hear she makes a mean Mai Tai. Let's go with that.
Oh, I like that. I'm starting to like her better already. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to have to ask you on the other side, what is she? Is she just... Does she mean well and just doesn't know? But I'll ask you on the other side of the break. I'm going to keep Michael Hart over. Back with more. Didn't have a time, but I always had a vision. Always had.
One other thing I might want to say is that anti-Semitism has no place in the United States Congress. And Congressman Omar is terrible, what she said. And I think she should either resign from Congress or she should certainly resign from the House Foreign Affairs Committee. What she said is so deep-seated in her heart that her lame apology, and that's what it was lame, and she didn't mean a word of it, was just not appropriate. I think she should resign from Congress, frankly. But at a minimum, she shouldn't be on committees. Certainly that committee.
Remarks from President Trump from Washington today, talking about newly sworn in Congresswoman Ilhan Omar from Minnesota. Back with Michael Hart now. Michael, from the Heart of America show, author of Unknown America. Just find him. He's very active on social media, so you want to check him out there. Always talking about what he and his audiences are talking about. And it's always, you know, you describe yourself as cranky and caffeine-fueled, and that's what we just love to hear about that. But, you know, Michael, I think I speak for a lot of people when we say sometimes there are some political stories we want to avert our eyes for. We can't pay attention to everything. So this one is one that I've sort of been like, what's been going on here? What did she do? What did she say? And I saw people tweeting she swore in last month, not on a Bible, and it was a whole thing because, of course, she's not a Christian.
Well, you know, but there are two Muslim women that were sworn in, and they were actually sworn in with a Bible because that was
tradition.
Oh,
they were? Okay. See, there you go.
They were, but with that said...
Oh, there he went. But what I was going to say is you can't always trust everything on Twitter. I heard that on Twitter. And if you're dying to hit retweet on things that make you mad, don't do it, because you might be spreading that fake news we talk about. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, you know, I actually am an owner of a Quran. I've read the book. I have to comment on it. So I'm going to read portions of it. I'm not going to speak off the cuff. And so I happen to own a copy of the book. So did Thomas Jefferson, because we were dealing with a lot of Muslims back in that day and time. It gets back in all the Barbary pirate wars and things of that nature. We don't have time for that today. But Jefferson did have a Quran, and these women both wanted to be sworn in on Jefferson's Quran, using the point that since he owned it, that it was an acceptable book to be utilized. The Quran was, in fact, present there, but they did have to be sworn in using a Bible. And it gets into a lot of the deep-seated, you know, mistrust of the American news media. Nobody could really see what the book looked like. The Quran takes on a lot of physical differences in terms of its appearance. You know, it's a book. It's been reprinted 100 times over. But what Omar put out, tweeted the other day, was she's been leveling accusations that people in Congress are actually being paid off by lobbyists to support Israel. And that is so unbelievably far-fetched. But both of these women, particularly the one from Michigan, this Tlaib, has stated emphatically that Israel does not have a right to exist and that it should be abolished. And so you have these two very staunch Muslim communities, Minnesota and Michigan in this case, that were very, very much pro these two women. And a lot of people don't realize this. There was a move about 10 years ago in both states to encourage Muslims to move to these communities for exactly what they achieved here, the election of Muslim Congress people.
Wow. So 10 years ago, there was a specific push. You know, Michael, people don't realize there are all these lobbyists who, under the radar, while we're going about our day and seeing the normal things that happen, and we think, oh, politics happen, and the stories we hear are because of this and that. There are people pushing the narrative, paying for things like this. So go back, tell me again, 10 years ago, they started trying to get more constituents in Michigan and Minnesota so they could get congressional representation?
Yes, there was actually one group that was offering Muslim faith families to move to Dearborn, Michigan, in specific, to the tune of about $20,000 to move to that community on the pretense that they would vote for Muslim candidates in the future. You don't have that many Muslims spread in terms of any one geographical area, but Dearborn, Michigan is very heavily Muslim. And a lot of them were encouraged to move there for just this purpose, to get people in Congress so they could help to destroy the allied relationship between the United States and Israel. That's been going on for many, 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 many years in this country, and you're seen more and more of it. People like Pamela Geller and the folks over at Act for America, Robert Spencer, Dr. Zudi Jasser, all speak to that.
I love this. And I encourage our young people and anyone, you're never too old, get the foundation that Michael has where he's interested in history, knows what's going on. So then when things like this happen, you can pay attention and report back, because this is all so very important. And that's why I love your book, The Unknown or Unknown America. And I hope everybody checks Amazon, all bookstores and your website as well. So, OK, well, to be continued. Trump called on her to resign today. I'm sure that won't happen. Got the shutdown coming Friday. Will he use an executive order if he doesn't quite get the deal he wants from Democrats? Looks like they're trying to come to the table, maybe.
I don't think immediately, because for one thing, there is money in some of the military budgets where he won't have to call for an emergency. I think Trump is going to allow this to play out. You know, he's in Texas yesterday. According to the White House, 69,000 people tried to attend his event. 39,000 made it, only about 10,000 inside the actual venue. Right down the road, Beto O'Rourke's got reportedly 65 people that showed up to his event. So Trump, his approval ratings are the highest they've been. He's high for any president at this portion of his administration. He's got the momentum on his side. The State of the Union was masterful. Nancy Pelosi is having to denounce Omar and Tlaib. So right the moment, all the momentum is with Donald Trump. He's got time and he's got political capital he can now spend. I expect him to spend it by sitting tight.
Yeah, Pelosi's got some issues. Hey, what do you think she's thinking right now with Ocasio-Cortez and her Green Deal, where she's going to tax 70, 80, 90% of everything we ever make ever? Tippity top, she says.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that probably needs more of a visual. I think it's more along the lines of, God, because she is such a pain for the Democrat Party, because the Democrats, they always wanted to move towards the left, but now they've moved off the deep end to the left. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fact that you've got Maxine Waters as head of the House Finance Committee now, and Ocasio-Cortez.
Wait, Maxine just got three more ethics violations in her court. So that's something to mention too. You won't hear it in the mainstream media, by the way.
No, you will not. Well, I also understand that she's Native American as well, because that's in. But, you know, I think Pelosi is afraid that these people that would have liked to have ascended to the speaker's position, like Waters, are standing in defiance of her. They couldn't get her out of office or keep her from taking the speakership, but they can put thorns in her side by making her deal with these young and up-and-comers. And I'm telling you what, you know, if you had asked me 3 months ago, how's Donald Trump doing for 2020, I would have thought, I think he's going to make it, but it's a little dicey. If the election's held tomorrow, it's a landslide because of just this.
Boy, oh boy, we're short on time. I really wanted to talk to you about Elizabeth Warren, her bad week, where it came out with her handwriting that she wrote, I'm American Indian, and how she's made off that for decades and worked the system. And then the blackface in Virginia. But Michael, we're just going to have you back soon, okay?
Anytime.
Heart of America is his handle. Check him out there. We love having you on. Thanks so much. So cute. We are in the week that holds National Golden Retriever Day. So our TV audience just got a little dose of cuteness there with some wonderful pet viral video. And we're glad you all been along with us tonight here on the U2 America TV Network and on Biz Talk Radio. It's America Trends. And you can find us 24/7 on the Biz Talk Radio site and here on U2America.com. And if you see here, you can just go there and you've got all kinds of U.S. headlines. You can find out how to find us on Roku, your national network listings. And we've got some Apple TV as well. And then always ytaclub.com, you can find us. We have live streaming, and you can go on demand to find any of our past shows. And then click around. Macabre Theater on Saturday night, boy, does she have a big following. And why do you think that is? She's amazing. Small Town Big Deal, a lot of good programming. Pawn Stars, Paula Deen. So check around. We'd love to see you there. And then click through and find us on social media. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We would love to meet with you and all be friends. Okay? So finally tonight, we are going to... What if you woke up and your favorite band ever, something you love to listen to, practically live for, never existed? And what if you were that band, a band like the Beatles? Check out this new trailer for a new movie called Yesterday, coming out in June. Take a look now.
This was my last gig. If it hasn't happened by now, it's like a miracle.
Miracles happen.
What happened?
Electricity flicked off all over the world.
Cheese! Yesterday,
Ellie bought you a present.
All my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday.
When did you write that?
I didn't write it. Paul McCartney wrote it. The Beatles.
Who?
John, Paul, George and Ringo, the Beatles. No. Stop it.
Yesterday.
It's one of the greatest songs ever written.
Well, it's not Coldplay. It's not Fix You.
Do you genuinely not know who the Beatles are?
Genuinely.
Then I'm in a really, really, really complicated situation.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me.
Sorry, I'm just listening to Jack's new song.
What's this one called?
Leave It Be.
Let It Be.
Well, rock on, Jack.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, we should talk. See, we pay and you write songs and then you make a ton of money. And then we take most of it.
The one, the only, Jack Mallet! We would like you to write something right now.
Something in the way she moves.
No one's ever written this many great songs. How do you do it?
Attracts me like no other lover.
Sometimes it feels like someone else has written all the songs.
Hey Jude.
I've been waiting half my life for you to wake up and love me. But I'm a school teacher and you are the world's greatest singer-songwriter.
I'm not.
Except for you are.
It's gonna be the greatest album of all time.
I've got two men who claim that the songs are theirs. Let's see how this plays out, shall we?
There's something you should know.
Please make some noise for Mr. Jack Mallet!
Let me just give you this advice. Songs.